Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, all now part of our American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, where we now archive all of our podcasts. You'll see an icon over there, and you'll be able to look through and see all the wonderful shows we've done. This one's going to be a wonderful one as well. We've got Dr. Angela Watson, who's a senior research fellow at Johns Hopkins. Yes, that Johns Hopkins Institute for Educational Policy, Education Policy, good friends of ours over there. And she has also co-authored a recent resource, which is aimed at helping parents navigate helping their children learn at home. And in case you haven't noticed, the kids are learning at home in a lot of cases, okay? There's a pandemic out there. So we'll bring Angela on in just a second. I want everybody to know the newest issue of our magazine, Equity and Access, is over at ace-ed.org. You'll see it. Just scroll down a little bit once you get over there. It says read the current issue. Just click on those words. Boom. It'll take you right through to our online journal, which is an excellent, excellent, excellent issue. Johns Hopkins is in there quite prominently, all right? And you'll see some of the wonderful things that they're doing over there. We're really proud of it. We want you to go over, read our magazine, join our consortium. It's free to educators. We're doing a lot of work on equity. We want you involved. We want your voice heard. So please, spread the word for us. Go over yourself, ace-ed.org. And if, you can follow all the podcasts, but if you want to follow us in particular, it's at EduTalk Radio. All right, you can tweet with tweet over there. And also on LinkedIn, it's my name, Larry Jacobs. All right, it's also at Facebook on Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio. Okay, if you want to follow up on that. And without further ado, let me bring on Angela. There we go. Hi, Angela. How you doing?
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Are you down in Baltimore?
No, I'm not, actually. I work remotely, so I'm in Arkansas.
Arkansas. I have a good friend down there named Howie Knopf, who's on my show a lot. He runs a big thing called Project Achieve. He's a school psychologist. Wow. Where are you?
Oh, in Little Rock?
Where are you?
No, I'm not. I'm in Northwest Arkansas in Fayetteville. So we're up in the top corner near the flagship University of Arkansas, and then also Walmart headquarters. And
I was just
going to
say Walmart
area.
Headquarters. Yeah, that's huge stuff.
Yeah.
And wow, that's cool. Right. Are you from there?
Yeah.
Is that where you're from?
I am actually. Yes, I am from Arkansas. Yeah.
And where did you lose your accent? At what point did that happen?
I guess I never got it. I don't know. People tease my father about his accent, but I guess mine maybe is not quite so thick.
It is not thick at all. Like, I was surprised when you said you're from Arkansas, but that's great. It's a good place down there. And they just opened that wonderful museum down there, that art museum, right?
Oh, Crystal Bridges, yes. I've done some research on the art museum in Crystal Bridges, and, yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful facility and asset to the community. You know, they provide – or at least pre-COVID, they were providing free field trips to any school kids that could get there. So they have a great facility.
And that's the Walmart Foundation or the Walmart family or something like that to put that together,
It
right?
is. I think it's primarily Alice Walton, one of the daughters of Sam.
Well, good for them, certainly in that case, man. I know a friend of mine actually flew down there just to see it. They said it was fabulous. So I got the world pre-COVID. It was a lot easier back then.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. And so how long have you been with Johns Hopkins, Angela?
So I've been at Johns Hopkins for just over a year and a half. I started working with them right out of graduate school.
Cool.
And I'm just loving it. They do really great work.
Oh,
so it's,
they're
it's
fabulous
a
people.
It's a privilege, yeah.
And it's a privilege to have you here. And, again, please go. I don't know if you saw our magazine. But if you go over to ace-ed.org, you'll see all the wonderful things we're doing with them. Okay, we just love Johns Hopkins. Okay, they're just great folks. Okay, again, it's ace-ed.org. Now, are you like, I know you're a senior research fellow there, but did you have a specific interest in parents helping students even before COVID, or is this something that grew out of COVID?
I think that this is something really that grew out of COVID. When I mean, I do, obviously, I'm a parent, and I do have an interest in parents helping kids. especially when it comes to education and, you know, the importance of the family and all of that in education. But the first few days of COVID, when the crisis was really hitting and schools started closing, David Steiner and Ashley Berner, who run the Institute, came to the team and said, you know, what can we do to respond to this, and what's, you know, what are some ideas that people have? And so the first thing that occurred to me was, you know, as a parent, I was feeling it. And I knew that parents really needed resources. And so one of my colleagues, Alana Bjork-Lim-Young, and I sat down and really started compiling a list of suggestions, you know, as teachers and moms and education researchers. You know, we kind of gave our two cents. But we also compiled a big list of high-quality instructional materials that parents could access online. And a lot of these companies were offering these things for free or seriously reduced cost, you know, to help people bridge this gap over last spring and the summer. So we really compiled a big list of all of these resources with all kinds of suggestions and divided them up by grade level and subject so that parents could, you know, kind of get their feet under them in those first few months.
All this is important with or without COVID, I got to tell you.
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the crazy things about this horrible pandemic. I can't say enough bad about it. Okay. But one of the crazy good things is that it's forcing us to do things that we might not have done otherwise. So now we've got this great list of parent resources from Johns Hopkins. Okay?
Right.
That's simple.
Well, and, you know.
It's amazing. And by the way, I have to say hello to Ashley and David. They've both been on the show, the people who run the Institute. Hi, guys. How you doing? There you go.
Yeah, and, you know, when we put it out, we weren't sure, you know, what kind of response we would get. But it really got a lot of oxygen. And it clearly let us know that this was – it was a timely resource and that it was something that parents needed.
How did you get the word out? What'd you do?
We put it out. Yeah, the Johns Hopkins School of Education put it out on their website. And, of course, the Institute did as well. But, you know, as you know, Johns Hopkins – medical side is one of the leaders in all things COVID. Sure. And so the website hits for Johns Hopkins have just been huge. And so, you know, we were able to piggyback a little bit on that, but people were able to access the resource, you know, in that way, just by Googling Johns Hopkins and COVID, and then things would pop up. So,
wow. That's really, really cool. And I'm glad it got a lot of play out there, and I'm sure it still is. Are you still working on it as you learn more things?
We are. So we have updated. We are working right now on finishing up an update, looking at, you know, things have changed. And in the first go around, we were really thinking of, you know, phase one of COVID. We were all just kind of treading water and trying to get through what we thought were going to be a few weeks of having kids home. So we were all just trying to survive. And that's kind of how the resource was written. But, you know, as time has gone on, I think we have all realized that we're in this for a while, and that, you know, for sure the rest of this year is going to be impacted. Probably next year will be heavily impacted. And I don't know if we'll ever go back to the way things were. And so
we have updated
the resource, really like looking head on at the reality that we're facing and addressing it and helping, you know, offer suggestions for parents working through. You know, we were asked by Columbia Medical School, organization at Columbia, to come and speak to their doctors about balancing, you know, work and parenting and schooling your kids from home. And, you know, these were smart folks, but they really felt ill-equipped to deal with, you know, balancing all of this and making sure that their kids didn't fall behind. And, you know, so we really felt like even in phase two, I think of COVID, you know, at home 2.0, I think people really still need ideas for how to get through this and, you know, how to embrace keeping their kids home or whatever they're having to, you know, people are in all different circumstances, but
they're dealing with that.
Right.
They sure are. And what about your kids? I assume they go to Fayetteville schools or schools right around there, I assume. Okay. What's going on in Fayetteville?
Yes. So it's been really interesting. Our district offered a choice right off the beginning of this year. That my kids were both home with me starting in March. And then, you know, they were home all spring and all summer. And then when school started back, we were offered a choice of full-time back to school or various parts of part-time back to school, which they called hybrid, or then completely virtual.
Right.
So we started off completely virtual. It was a bit of a nightmare, mostly because of technology issues. You know, I was working from home, and so I had two kids also on Wi-Fi trying to Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, so you're running three Zooms out of one household, and
I
mean, it just, we couldn't support it. And so that became, you know, a lot of a struggle. So I ended up sending one of the kids, I have a fifth grader, he went back 2 days. So currently he's going 2 days a week, and then the other 3 days he's home. And then my eighth grade son is home full time right now, but he's going to be going back 2 days after the semester break. So we've just kind of been, we've been feeling our way through it like every other family in America.
Trying to
figure out, you know, what's going to work. And, you know, we were worried about contagion, but in our schools, it hasn't really been a huge issue. So knock on wood, we're hoping that that continues for the spring semester.
Again, the same thing here. I live in Maine. I live in a kind of not real rural, but rural enough, okay, about 45 minutes from Portland, okay? And so it's not the upper echelons of the atmosphere there, but it's still a little bit rural. And we're doing okay, too, okay? But it's a tough time, and you know, it's just crazy out there, Angela. It really and truly is. You know, I want to talk to you, and this is a key thing, and you have high-quality resources available to parents, all right?
Correct.
And
yes.
I know you guys, okay, at the Institute for Education Policy. The key word is rigor and high quality. Okay, actually, that's more than one word, but you get my point, all right? It really is, okay, that's the whole thing. If we give kids junk, they're gonna get spit back junk, okay? And it's got to be high quality, and it's got to be rigorous, and that's for every kid. We cheat kids. I've learned this from Ashley. I only wish she was my education professor, okay, back 27 million years ago, okay, approximately. I was taught how to teach in cave paintings. That's how old I am, okay? It's unbelievable. But Ashley, who's much younger, I might add, Ashley, okay, has convinced me, and she's right, that the rigorous curriculum absolutely works, all right? And when you looked at the things that you were presenting to parents, how did you measure that against, I know, your need and your belief in rigor and high quality? What were you looking for?
So that was a good question. So we looked, first of all,
thank you, Professor. Thank you, Professor Watson. I appreciate that. It's almost Thanksgiving vacation. Can I go home now? Right. Just kidding. Go ahead. Go.
We looked at reliable sources. Right. First of all, we didn't just look on Pinterest for fun ideas and worksheets. You know, we looked at reliable sources and people that had expertise in the area. We also, you know, I work less in the curriculum space, but one of my colleagues has worked a lot in curriculum and has a lot better handle on what's out there and what's considered high quality or not. We used Ed Reports, has basically a grading system, a red light, green light system for curriculum. And so we would look through that. One of the other criteria that we used when compiling the list is we really wanted things that were either low cost or free access, because this was for parents and we wanted it to be equitable and that people
can
access easily. So that was a big criteria for us. Not every single thing was free, but we did, you know, try to keep that in mind when we selected things and try to have the bulk of the materials free access, or, you know, a lot of the companies were offering free access for the first 4 weeks or something like that. So we tried to include those materials.
Mm-hmm.
We went to a lot of resources. I think the New York Times had like a writing seminar that they were offering for older students. A lot of the art museums had, you know, science museums had resources, student resources that were really good quality. We really tried to pay attention to those kind of things and not just, you know, fun worksheets.
Good for
that
you.
We found off Google or Pinterest.
Yeah. I believe that. We don't want. We have fun worksheets are fine, okay, but not for this.
Right.
Okay, these kids
right.
still have to learn, and there's great ways to do that. How did you? I want to ask this right. How did you coordinate that? And I know you did the best you could with the curriculums, okay, in the different states, et cetera. And let me ask it this way: if they go to a museum, all right, and let's say the Metropolitan Museum of Art, they go to the Metropolitan Art, and they look at something. How did you coordinate that with the curriculum needs of a kid who might be going there? Does that question make any sense at all?
Right. So we really didn't have to worry.
I guess it
about
does. Okay. Good. Yeah.
Well, because the museums are savvy and they have aligned a lot of their lessons to the standards.
Hmm.
And so on the lessons, when you pull them down, oftentimes they will have standards addressed. And so at the bottom or, you know, on the side or something. And so you can see what standards are being addressed and see if they're appropriate for what grade levels. And, you know, so it's probably unreasonable to expect parents to do that, you know, as they're going along, but certainly the lessons are aligned to the standards. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can feel certain that what they're learning is in some way aligned to the standards, and thus hopefully their curriculum is also aligned to the standards. So everything is kind of in working towards the same goals.
And what did you want? And I recognize this is a parent resource, but use you as an example. Okay, if you send your, I'll use the National Zoo. Who cares? Let's say they go to a curriculum at the National Zoo. You're the parent, all right, and your
right.
fifth grader goes to that. Okay, what would you do? Okay, as the parent now suddenly in charge of education, so to speak, all right, with that in new information that the kids have, do you share that with the teacher? Do you say, Mrs. Johnson, I just had my son do this, blah, blah, blah. What would relate to what you're teaching him? How does it work from there?
Right. So I think that there's a difference in what we thought was happening in the spring and what we think is happening now. So in the spring, you know, our experience was, and the experience of a lot of people, was that these kids were doing the virtual lessons, you know, on a computer, and it was taking them 30 minutes, an hour and a half,
yeah.
2 hours. You know, my own kids were working on their work for an hour and a half, and then they were done. Well, there were two problems there. First of all, that's not enough, you know, schoolwork. We still have the rest of the day. We've got to do something. Number two, I'm still trying to work. And I'm the other
exactly.
room, you know, trying to do my own work. And so, you know, I needed to keep them busy. And, you know, all parents probably were having the same difficulties. And they knew that the kids needed more work than an hour and a half. So I think that our thinking about these resources was that they would be supplementary, right? These would be things that parents could do, you know, to kind of to cobble together their own curriculum at home, you know, something that the kids could do to continue their learning. One of the things that we advised parents for this new resource was to really focus on problem areas for the kids. So, you know, if they're strong in English language arts, but they're weaker in math, then maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, you focus your energy on math as a supplement and then, you know, let the other stuff ride or, you know, not try to do all subjects if you don't have the time and you're a working parent, and you're trying to get everything done.
Go where they
you
need
know,
it.
So I think yeah. that the, yeah, I think the context has changed a little bit from last semester when everybody was just thinking that we were treading water to, you know, this semester and this school year where, you know, treading water is not good enough and we're going to have to make different plans.
And Angie, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to use you to extrapolate out to all parents everywhere. Okay. With all of these, here you are, you're Mrs. America. Okay. So you're speaking for everyone, the entire country. All right. No pressure. Okay, but seriously, and I'll just let you answer. Do you feel that your kids have learned a good deal this year? You know, last spring, this fall, how do you feel that your kids are learning?
Right. You know, my personal
Mrs. America, speaking for America, ladies and gentlemen,
you know,
Dr. Angela Watson.
I think that there's a pretty strong consensus that the spring was a disaster. You know, it was
mm-hmm.
just a disaster. And there's no real blame. You know, everyone was doing their best and trying to survive and getting up to speed, and we didn't have the technology in place. The teachers were thrown into this, you know, also struggling in their own personal lives and, you know, under the same duress that the rest of us were. You know, and then we got through the summer, but we've had, you know, 6, 8, 9, 10 months to get it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do feel like I have been surprised this year at what my kids are learning. You know, I have one at home. Now, I think that's fine for some kids and not fine for other kids. You know, and even my two kids are different. So, you know, my particular kid is doing just fine at home learning. And, you know, he's suffering from being away from his friends and the social isolation, which we're trying to address, you know, by sending him back for 2 days in the spring semester. But, you know, I've been shocked that he is learning more than I thought that he would, given what the experience was in the spring and of last year. So, you know, now that's not to say that there isn't serious learning loss going on across the country. And you know, my kids are – one of them is in school, and we're, you know, we see that kids that are more advantaged are more likely to be in school right now as we're talking, whereas, you know, more disadvantaged kids are home. And, you know, like I said, it works for some kids in some circumstances and not so great for others. And age groups, you know, the older kids I think are more equipped maybe to do their own work.
I think kids are going to, my personal opinion, though I do not have young kids, my personal opinion is that the kids are probably learning more than we think they are. You said that. Okay. Okay. The kids, kids are resourceful. Okay. And they know they have to learn. And the other thing is the measure has changed because everyone has been out of school. So the measure of where they need to be has to change.
Sure.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? So when push comes to shove at the end of 10 years or so, I think we'll be able to equal it out, okay, and make it work. And I want to ask you something. Thank you for your insights there, okay? With the resources, and this has been a challenge everywhere, all right? Now, I'm very hot on this because, as you know, we have our Consortium for Equity, all right? As you looked at the resources, I'll just say it this way. Were they equitable and accessible to all kids? All right, and I will tell you what I'm talking about. When there were conferences in the field of education, I used to go to almost every one of them. And I'd speak to the exhibitors, all right, and ask them if they were interested in products and services dealing with equity, if that part of their regimen. And every one of them would say, absolutely, that's all we think about. Okay, and I believe them, except I always ask them, well, what have you done? What can you show me that shows me that? And very few of them could give me an answer. They look at me basically like a deer in the headlights. Okay?
Sure.
Because the thought was there. Believe me, they're all good people. Okay? But the resources were not. And I'm thinking of kids, you know, English as a second language, that sort of thing. As you look through the resources, okay, did you find were they equitable? Were they available to all kids? How did that work? How did that look?
Right.
Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Yeah, right. So I think there's two issues with that. First of all is, you know, equitable access to the materials, right? And then developing equity within the materials. So access was a huge problem, and it still is.
Oh, yeah. Still
is. You know, with internet technology, you know, teacher quality, and like I said, you know, kids, you know, in school versus the kinds of kids that aren't in school right now, and, you know, the loss that is occurring, the disparity in the learning loss that's probably going to result from that. So these are all problems of just being able to access the materials. So no matter how good the materials are, if you don't have internet access, you know, you're going to have trouble.
You can't get to them. That doesn't matter.
Or if you've got 3 or 4 or 5 kids at the kitchen table all trying to work off the internet and you don't have enough internet speed to support that, then, you know, that's a real problem. And we had that problem at my house. I just have 2 kids. So, You know, I know that a lot of people, rural connectivity, not only do they not have internet, they don't have cell phone service. And so they're having to drive in our community. You know, we're a little bit more rural, and people were having to drive into school to the school parking lot and do their lessons to get internet connectivity.
I mean, that's just, how comfortable, you know, how conducive to learning.
That's not sustainable, you know, so that's not great. The other issue, though, with equity within the resources is kind of where this high-quality instructional materials comes in. And I think, you know, high-quality instructional materials have this focus on knowledge building and the content, right? And so, you know, the counterfactual to that are the skills-based curricula that teach kids how to find the main idea, but there's no focus on building any kind of knowledge base. And kids need those bundles of information in order to connect what they're learning and make it interesting. And they don't know where to file these facts about sharks or about Rome that they're learning in their skills work, because they don't have the background knowledge to attach that to anything meaningful. And so, you know, high-quality instructional materials help do that. These skills-based curriculum are fine for kids that are getting the content knowledge at home through their parents or through life experiences. You know, they're going to art museums or they're out in the world. You know, I worked on a study where we took kids, underprivileged kids went on an art field trip. And one of the highlights for them, I went along and observed the field trip. And the highlight for them, one of the highlights, of course, they love the art museum too, but the highlight was the elevator that had glass doors on three sides so that they could see out. They had never been in an elevator.
Oh,
is it around this corner? Is it around? You know, and so those kinds of experiences are really important. And we don't, you know, so if kids are getting that stuff at home, then skills-based curricula is fine. But if kids aren't getting that kind of background content knowledge at home, then there's a huge knowledge gap, a huge learning gap that is happening for them, and it shows up on test scores. And so, you know, that's where the high-quality curriculum really fills that knowledge gap and helps kids that don't have access to that bundles of knowledge, helps them fill that gap. And the equity piece, you know.
I love what you just said. I mean, I hadn't thought of it that way, but you do. And some people, you do need knowledge. That's basically what you're saying.
Right.
If you don't have bundles of knowledge, nothing connects.
All rote memorization of the state capitals or whatever, that may not be all we need to focus on. But it is important to know what a capital is.
Exactly.
And that there are capitals of states, and, you know, capitals.
But again, once you know that, but if it, the funny thing is, when you have the bundle of knowledge, you build around it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know, it's that simple. I mean, it really is. That was very interesting. Thank you for that. That was great. Another great point of view mention my name. Apply to the Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy. They're looking for somebody like you, Angela. Okay, mention my name. They all know me. Okay.
I will. Thank you.
That was very well said. You know, but it is so putting the onus of it was hard enough to teach with the equity factor, the accessibility factor, the access to learning, to teach these kids with professionals, i.e. educators, trained educators. Now suddenly it all falls on at home. Imagine the difficulty of that. I mean, you are a trained educator. Your kids are very lucky. Okay?
Right, and that's what we acknowledged. I struggle still making sure that everybody's doing what they need to be doing and getting everyone's needs met and working, and, you know, it's a struggle for people, you know.
It is, boy. And the beauty of it is you were struggling, and you're you. Try to imagine somebody who has no background in education except they went through school. Okay? It's brutal. Over on the website, I just want to ask you this, and maybe you know this. I'm having trouble finding exactly where the resource is. Do you know where it is? I'm at the Institute for Education Policy. J-H-U-E-D-U, but I can't find the parent resource, and I just want to point people to it. And I don't mean to put you on the spot with that. That's not my point.
I'll have to look it up, but go ahead. We'll
talk, and I'll
work on that.
Would you do that and send that to me? Because I can, when I archive the show, okay, I can put this on there, okay, so that they can find it, okay?
Yes.
But I just want to make sure people know where it is. That's all. Okay.
I will. Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay. Angela,
yeah,
have a good time.
You.
This was great. Oh, Fayetteville, Arkansas.
I did.
Well,
thank you very much.
Well,
I appreciate
thank
it.
You
it
for
wonderful.
Taking time
Anytime.
Out of a busy day. I appreciate it. This is great stuff. And I want people to really I know how great the stuff is that you folks do at the Institute for Education Policy. And I want to make sure everybody can get their hands on it because it's so well thought out and so important. Okay, you guys do a lot of good work out there. Okay, believe
thank
me, I know
you.
That.
Thank
so,
you.
Thank you, my dear. Okay, stay safe down there. Okay?
All right,
and
sure, thank you.
Enjoy
Rick.
It. All right. Thank you, Ange.
Thank you very much.
Be good.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Dr. Angela Atchin. I'll try that again. Dr. Angela Watson, everybody, who's a senior research fellow at Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy. And I'll make sure I get this, okay, up on site. So that you can find it easily, all right? The Institute for Education Policy, just Google that, over at Johns Hopkins, okay? And by the way, just so you know this, his name is Johns Hopkins, and the reason it's Johns, not John, he's named after his wife's, his mom's family, okay? So his mom's family's name was Johns. They gave him that name, not just John. There you go, little factoid. All right, so it's Johns Hopkins. All right, we'll archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Go over there, see what we're doing. Read our magazine, join our consortium. It's all free to educators. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening, and have a good day. Can't get the music going here. Something's going on. Let's see. What's going on here? I'll make it dramatic in a second. Hold on. We'll get the music going. Let's see. Here we go. All right. Sorry you had to wait for that. It's only just the ending music, but for some reason it disappeared off my screen. Okay. Thanks for listening.